Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to what is being paid attention to, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is Wednesday, January the 19th in the year 2011 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight's topic, ADHD Advocacy Part 1. The law and your rights made simple. With us today, our guest is attorney Matthew Cohen. Hang on a second. I'm having some technical difficulties here. Hold on a second.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Matthew?
Yes.
Ah, yes. Our guest, everyone. He has arrived. Matthew, we're just getting things kind of kicked off here. For everybody else out there, we had a difficult time connecting here, so bear with me. Real quickly out there, before we jump into today's topic, I want to remind our iTunes listeners out there that you can preview upcoming episodes of Attention Talk Radio by going to attentiontalkradio.com. A list of our shows scheduled for the next month are up there. And for those iTunes listeners or those people out there who don't like going to websites to try to find out what's going on, I invite you to go to attentionradio.com and you can sign up for our newsletter and we'll actually send our schedule right to your inbox. Schedule for that goes past the next 30 days. It actually schedules out to sometimes up to 2 months. So keep that in mind. Again, you can go to attentiontalkradio.com to get the most recent stuff, or you can go to attentionradio.com and sign up for our newsletter. Next, our weekly ADHD update. I want to remind everyone that the next ADD Resources teleconference is Anxiety and Intuition by Tanya Valente. That's going to be Thursday, January the 27th at 8 p.m. Also, ADD Resources is going to be offering, Ari Tuckman is going to be presenting 6 Simple Rules, Fundamental Strategies to Overcoming Inattention, Hyperactivity, Impulsivity. That'll be February the 23rd at 6 p.m. For that and for more on ADD Resources teleconference, go to addresources.org. Next up, Linda Rogerty, the ADD Diva, is hosting a free monthly teleconference entitled Bring It On, Life Lesson of ADD Resilience. That's Monday the 24th of January at 8:30 p.m. For more information, go to addiva.net/events. As a reminder for our coaches out there, the ADHD Coaches Organizational Conference, the 2011 one that is going to be held in Chicago, April 29th and May 1st. For more information, go to ADHDcoaches.org. And then finally, for those out there, the children and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, their conference has been scheduled to be held in Orlando, Florida, November the 10th through the 12th. So mark your calendars for that. And if you want to get more information, go to chadd.org. So with that aside, again, tonight's topic is ADHD Advocacy Part 1, the laws and your rights made simple. Next week we're going to come back and we're going to build on today's conversation and talk about advocacy and talk about real-world situations. And with us today in our studio is Matthew Cohen. He's the co-founding attorney at Moynihan and Cohen Law Firm in Chicago. He's well-known for his work in special education with extensive experience in healthcare and mental health law. He served as principal litigator in a number of important special education cases and is the primary or collaborating author in several amendments to the mental health and special education laws in Illinois. He participated in the signing ceremony in Washington, D.C. for the Individuals with Disability Education Act amendments in 1997 and is recognized for his participation in the process of passage of that legislation. He's lectured nationally on special education topics, as well as mental health and confidential laws, and has authored numerous articles on these subjects. He's an adjunct professor at Loyola Law School and has taught at Northwestern University School of Law. He's the past president of CHAD, Children and Adults with Attention Deficit and Hyperactivity Disorder, and currently serves on CHAD's Public Policy Board. He's a graduate of he got his law degree from the University of Minnesota and his bachelor degree from Grimmel College many years ago. And with that, Matt, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Appreciate it.
Matt, I'm very excited about today's show. There's been a lot of interest in this for particular reasons, and today I really just want to kind of focus on some basics. I've heard people talk about ADHD and advocacies and laws and stuff like that, and everybody kind of jumps into things a little bit. And if you don't mind, I'd like to kind of pause and just talk about the pertinent acts, what they're really kind of designed to do, and some of the basics, and we'll build from there. And in the spirit of doing that, some of these are targeted to kids. Some are kind of adults, and I'd like to kind of focus on some that are pertinent to the workforce first and then move to the kids. So you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think American with Disabilities Act is probably more pertinent to that crowd to speak to first. Is that accurate, or is there something else that's probably more appropriate?
No, I think that's probably accurate, though. There are probably two laws that operate somewhat in parallel or in conjunction with each other that are relevant to adults, and they also have relevance for kids, but applicable across the age span, whereas the special ed laws obviously are only applicable to kids. So the two laws that I think would be worth starting out talking about would be the Americans with Disabilities Act and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, which is a civil rights law that's also pertinent. So I can dive right in, or if you've got questions.
Yeah, well, let's start with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Tell us about the act, the basis of the act, and what it's designed to do.
Well, essentially, the Americans with Disabilities Act is a very, very broad law that is intended to protect people with disabilities from discrimination and to ensure that people with disabilities have, in a sense, an equal opportunity for access to the opportunities that people have without disabilities. And what's kind of remarkable about the Americans with Disabilities Act, it was originally passed in 1990 and it was recently amended. So sometime tonight we should talk about some of the amendments because they're very relevant to ADHD. But the essential structure of the ADA is that there are three different main components to the Americans with Disabilities Act. The first regulates employment and requires that employers ensure that there's no discrimination against people with disabilities in either the hiring process or for people who are already employed when they have disabilities. So the first title deals with employment. The second deals with state and local governmental entities, which includes any program from the Park Service at the local level or the community library up to the state government. And the Title II, which deals with state and local governments, prohibits discrimination either against people who are seeking employment with or working for the state government or local government, or anyone who's seeking to receive services from or trying to participate in the services of the state and local government. So it's both discriminatory if someone has ADHD and is employed by a state or local entity and is discriminated against based on their ADHD, and it's also improper to discriminate against someone who is seeking services from a state or local government because mm-hmm. of their ADHD. And then the third and broadest title that's relevant to people with ADHD is that it's also illegal for places of public accommodation to discriminate on the basis of disability, including ADHD. And a place of public accommodation is any public or private institution or entity that provides services to the public. And that could include anything from a lawyer's or doctor's office to a private country club to a college or university that is providing educational services.
So am I to understand, is that if you have ADHD and you are hired, then they're required to provide reasonable accommodations for you in order for you to perform at whatever level they need?
Well, that's not incorrect, but it's more complicated than that. The first thing that we've got to do, and this is relevant in relation to any of the three areas of employment, state and local services, or public accommodations, is talk about what does it mean to have a disability. And the fact that you're diagnosed with ADHD by itself doesn't automatically mean that you're covered by the law or protected.
Mm-hmm.
In order to be protected, you have to have a diagnosed or proven physical or mental impairment, and ADHD
yep.
is a physical or mental impairment. It's a mental impairment, which substantially limits a major life activity. and the significance here is substantially limits and major life activities. So a person could theoretically be diagnosed with ADHD, and there's no question that they have it, but if the ADHD is not substantially limiting a major life activity, at least one or more major life activities, then they might not qualify as having a disability. So
certainly,
in an employment situation, the fact that you have it isn't enough. You have to show that it's substantially limiting something that is a major part of your life, and particularly that it's substantially limiting something that is relevant to the job situation. There are two other ways that you can be protected, though, and this is a little bit more technical but also important. You could be protected if you have a history of disability, even if you're not currently experiencing the symptoms, but the employer was discriminating against you based on the history, or if you are perceived as having a disability. So, for example, if you have a family member with ADHD and the employer says, well, I don't really want to have anybody on my insurance plan with a family member with a disability, that might be a basis for discrimination claims, either based on the perception, or even you can be protected if you're in association with someone with a disability. So there are a number of different ways that you can qualify for the protection, but just the diagnosis itself is not enough.
You got me thinking now. This is because it's kind of like nailing Jell-O to a wall here. Practically, let's say we got somebody with ADHD in the workplace and they're kind of struggling. From a practical sense, and I know this is kind of difficult, for this law in terms of them looking toward what it provides them protection from discrimination and can help them with some accommodations. But in working with those, how is it typically applied, or how is it typically useful for those with ADHD?
Well, the first thing, and I should have said this at the outset, is that obviously every situation is different. Every situation is subject to interpretation, and I'm giving very general information rather than legal advice. So if someone's got a very particular question, they really need to talk to their own lawyer about it to get information that's specific to what's going on with them. So with that legal disclaimer aside, the other thing that's important to mention is that the burden is on the person with a disability to tell the employer that they have a disability and to demonstrate that they have it, and then to identify what are called reasonable accommodations. And so for a person with ADHD, obviously, and I think we can talk about this some more, but the first issue is, do they want to disclose that they have the ADHD and seek accommodations, or is there some reason for them to decide that they're better off if they don't talk about the fact that they have ADHD and forego the possibility of accommodation? But an example of an accommodation that might be useful is if there is a workplace where the person is doing a type of work that involves individual work on the phone, but most of the workers doing that work on the phone are in a large room together where there's a lot of noise and it's very distracting and makes it hard for the person with ADHD to concentrate. But there might be a smaller room nearby where it's quieter and the person would not have the problem of being so distractible. That might be an example of an accommodation would be to
certainly
do the same work but in a quieter room.
And that would be a situation where you might just go, I have ADHD, and so this is impairing my job, and you'd bring it to their attention to see if you could get some accommodations.
Again, though, the important thing here is something that might be obvious to the person with ADHD or to the community of all of us who are experienced with ADHD, just because it seems obvious doesn't mean the employer has to do it. You have to provide medical evidence of the impairment and the limitation and the need for the specific accommodation. So unless you've got clinicians who are experienced with ADHD saying that this person is capable of doing the job, but they have ADHD, they're highly distractible, and they need a less noisy or chaotic environment in order to do it, the employer doesn't have to respond to that.
Got it. Reiterating your comment earlier that every situation is a little bit different, and circumstances are there. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of bring out in the show is really just kind of educate people on the complexities of this, because if you start to think that you're going to kind of dabble in it, it's probably better that you consult with some experts and somebody get some consultation to help you move forward as opposed to just jump into it.
Absolutely, because the risk, this is the point I was alluding to earlier, the dilemma that any person with a disability faces because the burden is on them to disclose the disability, to prove that they have it, and to seek an accommodation that is demonstrated to be reasonable, but the consequence, if it's determined that they are not regarded as having disability, is that they may be subject to some form of adverse action at the job or maybe covert discrimination, it's not a neutral situation. It's a situation where there are advantages to doing it and disadvantages to doing it, and you have to be very careful about being aware of how you do it and whether you need to do it and what the proper procedure is, and above all else, making sure that you have appropriate documentation, including good and current clinical evidence that you've got the disability, that it's impairing your functioning in a substantial way, and that the accommodation is reasonable.
Absolutely. With that, I want to kind of pause here and go run to a commercial break. And when we come back, I want to kind of just kind of summarize this real quick, and we can kind of segue into Section 504, which will kind of talk about this area, but also start moving into the kids. So with that, we'll be right back.
This is your ADHD information station. Attention Talk Radio. News, updates, and alerts sent right to your inbox. Sign up now at attentionradio.com.
Flying into life's storms with ADD can leave you swirling in chaos, feeling lost and alone. But Steve Gundy is here to say you're not alone, and there's a horizon waiting for you. Steve Gundy Coaching Practice, LLC, at 574-855-1800 provides the necessary support and tools you need to maneuver your way through the storms of life. Call Steve today at 574-855-1800 and schedule your free 30-minute session. That's 574-855-1800. Fly through life's storms to a new horizon.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
I'm Jeff Copper, host of Attention Talk Radio, here to talk to you about CopyTalk.com, a voice dictation service. This is not just some voice dictation software. It's a real dictation service by people who type whatever you want. When I need to document something, all I do is hit speed dial on my cell or work phone and start speaking. The folks at CopyTalk will type it up and email it back to me that day. The best part is I can dictate as many 4-minute messages as I want, all for one flat monthly fee. Go to copytalk.com/ATR, enter Jeff Copper as the referrer's name, and sign up for the free trial account today. If you tell them I sent you, then you'll get $20 off the monthly subscription for as long as you keep the service.
Could hiring an attention coach really help you move forward? Does a child get wet when they dive into a swimming pool? You can get started moving forward today. Just call Dig Coaching Practice at 813-837-8084 and schedule a free consultation. Tell us you heard about us on Attention Talk Radio and get 50% off your discovery session. For more information, visit digcoaching.com. Don't delay, do it today. You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. With us today is Matthew Cohen, attorney. We're talking about ADHD advocacy. In the first part, we were talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act. And Matthew, what I really kind of got out of it is that it's the law is designed to protect people from discrimination and provide some accommodations, but it's a complicated law. The burden of proof is really on you to say, listen, I have this situation, and kind of prove what you need. And the complexities are such that is, if you're going to get involved in something like this, you need to go with your eyes open and not shoot from the hip. Is that an accurate summary?
Absolutely, and particularly if it's a job-related issue or related to a school discipline situation at the university level or accommodations on a licensing exam or something like that, it's very important to try to find an advocate or an attorney who's knowledgeable about the law to help to advise you.
Excellent. And next week, one of our topics is to get into some of the politics and difficulties of do you want to disclose at work and, you know, the possible games and stuff like that. But moving on, we're segueing kind of with that and moving into kids a little bit. Can you talk to us a little bit about this?
Before we get to and 504 deals with kids and adults, but let's talk about one more ADA issue, which is that,
okay,
that there were a couple of Supreme Court cases that really limited the application of the ADA and made it much harder to establish you had a disability. And the reason was that the court said that if you're receiving some form of treatment or assistance or accommodation, whether physical or environmental, that effectively neutralized the impact of your disability, then you were no longer protected. Those were called mitigating measures. And for people with ADHD, this is very important because, for example, stimulant medication or other medication is a mitigating measure that for many people might have a sufficiently positive effect as to substantially control the symptoms or even, you know, make them essentially not noticeable. And the effect of these Supreme Court decisions was to say that if the mitigating measure means that you're no longer substantially limited in the life function in your day-to-day activity, then you're no longer protected by the law, which meant that people could discriminate against you because the mitigating measures you were using allowed you to function in a normal way. And thankfully, just in this past 2 years, the Congress amended the ADA to say that mitigating measures were no longer a basis for regarding a person as being non-disabled if without the mitigating measure the disability would be substantially limiting. And that means a person with ADHD, even if either with medication or environmental accommodations, is able to function well if they can establish that they are substantially impaired without the mitigating measure, then they're still protected.
Wow.
So I just wanted to point that out because that's a really big shift in the law, and it's very, very germane to people with ADHD because so many people with ADHD need medication, and many people out there in the world have a very negative view of people taking medication. So this is a very important thing.
I appreciate you sharing that with us. That's excellent.
But you wanted to talk about Section 504. Section 504 is a very short law. It basically says that it's illegal to discriminate on the basis of disability in any program or activity that receives federal financial assistance. And this incorporates by reference all of the different requirements and procedures of the ADA. So the law itself is very short, but the regulations and interpretations of the law embrace something called parallel interpretation, which means that they use the same interpretations for Section 504 as they use for the ADA. But there's an important difference in terms of which segments of adult society and children are covered by the two laws, because the one big exception in terms of what institutions are covered by the ADA is that the ADA does not cover any institution that is religiously controlled. And that means that if a person works at a church and they have a disability, they're not subject to the protections of the ADA. If they go to a religiously controlled college or university, they're not covered by the ADA. If they go to a parochial school, they're not covered by the ADA.
Hospitals
that are religiously controlled, not covered by the ADA. So there's a very, very big loophole in the Americans with Disabilities Act for religiously controlled entities.
And there's a lot of entities out there that you wouldn't know that are controlled.
There's a lot of places that are controlled religiously. So that's a very big exclusion. But here's the big but. Section 504 applies to any entity that receives federal financial assistance, regardless of whether it's religiously controlled or controlled by a for-profit or not-for-profit or anything like that. So, for example, there's probably not a hospital in the United States that does not receive federal financial assistance. So it's very likely that even a religious hospital that might not be controlled by, governed by the ADA, or a college or university that's not governed by the ADA, probably, there are some very rare exceptions that where they're very deliberately avoiding taking federal funds, but most institutions that are religiously controlled of any magnitude, I'm not talking about churches or synagogues now, but institutions that provide services of one sort or another, colleges, universities, et cetera, do receive federal funds, and because they receive federal funds, then they're covered by Section 504, and then many of the same protections that are present under the ADA would be present under Section 504.
Wow. Wow. Let me just kind of pause here for a second for our live listeners. Today's show is scheduled for 30 minutes. It looks like we're going to run over. You guys will lose contact in about 5 minutes. Know that you can go to Attention Talk Radio and download, because we will continue after the 30 minutes over. We'll continue talking. You'll actually be able to hear the rest of this by podcast. Again, you just go to Attention Talk Radio and you can get the archives, or if our iTunes listeners, just go to iTunes and search for Attention Talk Radio and look for ADHD Advocacy Part 1. You'll be able to listen to this. So, Matthew, on one side, how does Section 504, just briefly, kind of Does it do much in the workplace other than just kind of, extend some of the stuff outside of religious institutions?
No, I would say that in the workplace, Section 504 doesn't really do much that ADA doesn't also do.
Okay.
So
okay.
In the workplace, unless it's a religiously controlled entity, you're probably going to be looking at the Americans with Disabilities Act as the primary focus.
Got it. And so wrapping up that side, the lesson that I'm learning tonight, and I had a sense of it, but more than anything, is that if you've got a really tough work situation and you feel like you need a little bit of help and you need some accommodations or you're being discriminated against, it's very complicated. We're trying to make it as simple as possible, but before you kind of dive into that pool, you need to educate yourself on it. Become immersed in it and consult with an expert before you go into it, because how you go after it, I think, is probably have a lot to do with the outcome.
Well, that's right. And the one other thing that's worth mentioning is that the rules are generally parallel for ADA and 504, but the enforcement mechanisms and remedies are somewhat different. So there are different options for how you would go about pursuing a complaint under ADA and 504, and somewhat different things that can be accomplished under the two laws. There's somewhat more flexibility in terms of your ability to bring suits under Section 504, for example, than there is under ADA, stricter
wow.
rules under ADA.
Okay. Let's see. So I tell you what, let's do this right now. I have a second break that I kind of want to do, but again, everybody, if you're listening live, you got about 3 minutes to go, and you'll have to pick up the rest of this podcast, but we're going to definitely go over and talk about 504 relates to kids in individual disabilities employment, not employment.
Education Act.
Education Act. But before we go to a break and before we do that, Matthew, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, if they have any questions or need assistance, how would they contact you?
Well, there are a couple of ways. Our website is www.monahan-cohen.com, MONAHAN-COHEN.com. My email address is mdcspedlaw@gmail.com. That's mdcspedlaw@gmail.com. And the phone number in Chicago is 312-419-0252. I also have a blog that's Disabled the Labels at blogspots.com.
Disable the Labels. I like that. All right, with that, everybody, we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back.
This is Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Okay, let's be honest here. How many times have you forgotten the wet laundry in the washer and it started smelling a little funky, so you had to wash it again, maybe even twice, in the same week? Well, you may be an AD Diva just like me. I'm Linda Rogley, and I founded the AD Diva Network for women with ADD-ish tendencies, especially those of us 40 and better. The AD Diva Network is a great place for support, connection, and a touch of whimsy. You can join us at addiva.net. That's addiva.net.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ari Tuckman, author of More Attention, Less Deficit, Success Strategies for Adults with ADHD. This is the only book actually written for adults with ADHD. Each chapter is divided into short articles, so you can read only the stuff you want in the order you want. I take lessons from the research and make them totally useful in your daily life. You can get a free PDF of the first chapter at adultadhdbook.com. Check it out.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. We got Matthew Cohen here talking about ADHD advocacy. Matthew, segueing into Section 504 as it relates to children. Can you give us a quick rundown?
Sure.
On that?
All public schools in the United States receive federal financial assistance. So all public schools in the U.S. are governed by Section 504 and its regulations. It's probably easiest to talk about 504 in comparison to the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, because the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act has a very specific set of procedures and criteria for evaluating kids suspected of having disabilities, and then requires that in order to qualify for special ed, you have to fit within one of the 13 categories of disability, and the disability has to adversely affect your functioning at school, and you have to need special education in order to qualify. Section 504 is relevant because Section 504 protects kids with disabilities against discrimination in the public schools, but we go back to the definition that I gave you earlier of eligibility for Section 504 is if a child has a disability, ADHD is a disability that can substantially limit a major life activity such as learning, concentrating, thinking, interacting, communicating, etc. In order to qualify for Section 504 protection, you don't need to require special ed services. It's enough if you need either special ed related services such as nursing service or counseling services or accommodations. And so the significance of this is that there are many kids with ADHD who may not need any help at school. There are many kids with ADHD who need a whole lot of help who may qualify for special ed under the category of other health impaired, which is where ADHD fits in. But then there's a third broader category, broader than the special ed category, of kids with ADHD who may not have sufficiently severe symptoms or needs to qualify for special ed, but they still qualify for Section 504 plan and for the protections of Section 504. So there are kids who need help who may be eligible for Section 504 even though they don't qualify for special ed.
So I'm at that real high level, help me if I'm correct me here if I'm wrong, but Section 504 was really a general law that was designed to ensure all kids have equal access to education, both whether they had a disability or not. Is that
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that. First of all, Section 504 doesn't apply just to kids. It applies to adults, too. That's why
we talk
about it in the adults segment. And secondly, it only applies to people with disabilities. So use Section 504 unless you have a disability, and it's in any program or activity receiving federal financial assistance, whether it's Boeing Airlines gets a contract, you know, to build airplanes, or a university receives a grant to do research, or the public schools receive federal money for all sorts of educational programs.
Okay. But so let me back up to you described Section 504 is a little bit more general with the individual.
Section 504 is just a general law that says it's illegal to discriminate against people with disabilities in any activity receiving federal money. It's like Title VII or it's a Title VI.
Okay.
It's like Title IX. It's just very broad protection. The special ed law, IDEA, was very focused on kids with disabilities in public school who require extra assistance in order to be able to be successfully educated.
Okay, so it's a little bit more targeted.
Mm-hmm. More targeted, much more specific in terms of the criteria to be eligible, and then much more specific in terms of what the procedures and safeguards are if you are eligible.
Can you touch on just a bit on the more specific criteria to be eligible?
Well, as I indicated earlier, to be eligible, you have to fit within one of the 13 categories that are in the law. In Section 504, there are no categories. As long as a qualified doctor or clinician diagnoses you as having a disability that substantially impairs a major life function, you can qualify, whether it's listed anywhere in the special ed law or not, whereas in the special ed law, you have to fit within those 13 categories of impairment, and you have to need special ed instruction, whereas 504, it's enough if all you need is accommodations or something like nursing services.
And within both of these, in a school setting, who has to initiate this? Is it something where the parents need to walk in and say, listen, there's an impairment and the proof is on them, or is it a school thing? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure, that's a very good question, and this is different than in the adult world, because with respect to children, the parents may seek an evaluation, so the parents have a right to initiate a referral, and the school then has to respond to that by either agreeing to do an evaluation or telling the parents why they won't and that they have the right to seek a hearing to challenge that. But the big difference is that in the public education world, elementary and secondary education, the school has an affirmative duty under the special ed system to engage in what's called child find. So they have to go out and seek out kids with disabilities even if the parent isn't asking for the evaluation. And that's very different than in the adult world.
Really, very, very different.
Yeah, and there's a child find requirement in Section 504 for kids also, though it's a little less explicit than it is in the special ed law. But again,
and
very different than with respect to adults.
And I would presume that that definition and how it's executed among states and among school districts varies across the country.
Incredibly, even from school to school, even from teacher to teacher.
Which is one of the things that I want to highlight. Like next week, I'd like to kind of talk about some of that stuff. But it's one, and help me here, Matthew. But the if you read some stuff, it's kind of generic. But when you get into your state and your school district and your situation, it can be very, very different from the norm. Is that
that's absolutely correct? And the school may be doing something without realizing that it's doing something improper. It may be doing something that the law allows discretion on, so there are some parts of the law where there is a degree of individual decision-making that's permitted at the state and local level, or it may be that the school is deliberately just doing something it doesn't want to do, even though it has some awareness that it may not be legally correct, and unless the parents are aware of their rights, they're going to get stuck.
Well, again, and to hint to next week, I got to believe if you got a school district that's in one sense supposed to be seeking out and trying to find to help these people, there's, you know, at the end of the day, economics is economics, and there's budgetary constraints, and there's a yin and a yang here saying, okay, listen, we kind of need to do that, but how hard do we want to look if we're having a hard time getting by on our budget as it is?
The pressure is on right now to reduce numbers of kids with disabilities, and kids with ADHD are especially vulnerable because it's a much more soft diagnostic process than if you have blindness or an orthopedic impairment. That's not to say that there aren't very good evaluation techniques available, but the perception is that because it's not visible, it's easier to just not take it seriously.
I want to just, and you just said something that was really powerful. The pressure is on. And again, we'll talk a little bit about that next week. But the key thing that I think that I've read and I've learned, and I turn to the experts, as this is if you're in a situation and you need advocacy, you need to roll up your sleeves, you need to get educated, and you need to kind of know what's going on. Don't just jump into this pool without pausing and considering and thinking through what's kind of going on, because it's complicated and it varies across the board.
That's right, and for people who want more information on the child side of this, it happens that I've got a book out that's called A Guide to Special Ed Advocacy, What Parents, Clinicians, and Advocates Need to Know, and you can get that on Amazon or through our website at www.monahan-cohen.com.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Matthew, I'd like to thank you for kind of coming on. Everybody out there, the title of the show was really trying to – The Laws and Your Rights Made Simple, and you know, it might not seem like we made it simple, because it's just complicated. It's just downright complicated. And the whole focus of the show is really we want to communicate to you that it's not a simple process. For a couple reasons. Number one, we want to educate you that it's not as simple as it might sound. But number two is if you're going to go in, if you're going to explore some of these avenues, educate yourself, learn about it, do your homework before you make that happen, and consult with an expert if need be, because this is it's ever changing territory, and you know, you want to, if you're going to go to battle, you want to make sure you got the resources that you need.
That's exactly right.
And next week, Matthew's going to come back again, and we're going to spend a lot more time next week just kind of talking about the pros and cons about what you do, like if you're at the workplace and you've got ADHD and there's a situation there, do you disclose or not disclose? Because sometimes it can look attractive. Hey, if I disclose, this might take the pressure off, but it actually could create some more problems. In a school situation, if you're dealing with school administrators, I'm not so sure you necessarily want to bring a lawyer in all the time, because at the end of the day, you could win the battle, but your kid has to go back to school there. There's not necessarily a right or not necessarily a wrong, but the idea is really kind of talk about how this really kind of works in the real world so that you can think about it.
Look forward to it.
So with that, Matthew, thank you very much for this week's show. We're looking forward to having you guys on again next week, all right?
Look forward to it. Appreciate it.
Thank
you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right.